All right, take two. We're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, October 4th. This one is much worse than the first one that I had to stop early, but I am Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com. You can head over to our site and check out really all the content that we're putting up daily for NFL, MLB while time lasts, very, very soon NHL and NBA. Have you covered for all things DFS. You can also get access to our projection system, which helps you calculate optimal lineups for NFL, MLB, and NBA powered by Lineup Lab. And that's just $29.95 a month. Head on over and see what the users are raving about. If you need any proof in the pudding, just go into the chat room, ask, hey, how is this? And you'll get the honest answer that you need, which will have you signing up, we think, pretty quickly. So
yeah,
I can't really do a better sales pitch than that.
I like your confidence, buddy.
You know what, though? It's not even that – well, I'm confident for sure, but – I just know it to be true. So that's all I know.
Fair enough, yeah.
Go over and read the chat. Now, that being said, we're coming off a week in NFL where we were this is never a good way to tout your own system, but we were saying, "Oh, let's go through some of the things that went right and some of the things that went wrong." And the things that went right column might be a little shorter than the things that went wrong column, but we can talk about where some of the plays that we made hit, where some maybe came up a little short, and what we will do to adjust or not adjust because we think it's their outliers or whatnot. So everything is case specific, and we'll get to just some, you know, things that happened in week four. The big one, obviously, Julio Jones. Julio Jones, I don't know if he posted what we said about him, like above the locker, as, you know, fuel for the fire. I want to think that he did. You know, okay. at least want to feel like I played a part in that. We were pretty adamant about, you know, to sum up what we've said about him so far, which has been mostly correct, was that Julio Jones was no longer in that elite class of wide receiver simply because the targets weren't there. Dun-da-da-da, he goes out and catches basically this is like a Baylor versus like a bad college football team kind of game where they just say, I'm just going to, you know, this guy's just have 300 yards passing today, try to get him the Heisman. He just obviously has the game of the week. Matt Ryan throws for 5 touchdowns. What are your thoughts about Julio Jones going forward? Like, what kind of adjustments did we had him down to like 10 targets, which is still pretty elite level. I mean, do we keep him there sort of, and we just see this as an outlier? What are your thoughts on Jones?
Yeah, I mean, so Jones goes out there, 15 targets, and I mean, the really impressive thing here was that he just had all the targets. Like, yeah. It's not like the Falcons threw the ball way more than usual. In fact, they didn't really do that at all. It's just that Jones's matchup was so good that they just exploited it over and over and over again. So I don't really totally know what to make of this. I mean, it doesn't totally undo the thought in my mind that the Falcons are going to try to just get where the getting's good from week to week, just because there was a lot of concern about the new Carolina back or secondary going into this season. So we hadn't seen that totally play out to this point, but we obviously saw it play out this week. I think we'll probably raise Jones's targets just because, you know, what with a 300-yard receiving week and all, it's probably somewhere in the middle of that in the previous weeks, and we were probably a little bit low, but I don't think he's like a slam dunk number one. Like, I mean, he's obviously a number one for season-long leagues, but I mean, like the guy you would choose over Antonio Brown or something at the same price point. So I'm warmer on him, but not super hot.
I was trying to figure out, you know, I spent some time on Sunday trying to figure out if there was like something we missed. I mean, this is such a crazy performance that I'm not sure. I mean, watching the game, he was open every single time, basically. So they found something and exploited it. You know, there was some news about Sanu early going into the game that he was playing hurt. Like, it was like a separated shoulder or something like that. Something that sounded bad, even though, like, when I read what the injury was and then saw he was still playing, I was surprised. So I don't know if that affected. I don't think that Sanu being hurt wouldn't affect how open Jones was every time, I don't think. So it just might have just meant that they were more incentivized to throw to Jones. I don't know. So,
well, I mean, part of it too is the, you know, Jones did have that strained calf leading into the prior week. So it could be that he's finally fully healthy. Like, maybe he was kind of dealing with that nagging injury and leading up in every game before that, and he's finally out from under it or something. But it's really hard to know for sure what the thing is. But, you know, with a guy like Jones and his track record, and especially his track record of usage, we can't ignore a performance like this, obviously. So
he goes into he'll play Denver this week, which is going to be a
tough matchup.
Yeah, it's a tough matchup. It'll be an interesting thing. It'll be interesting to see his ownership percentage going into this week, because whenever you have such a high profile game, it does convince people sometimes to maybe overplay a guy, I think, where they just say, oh my God, I don't want to miss it. Like, I don't want to miss that again, right? And that's isn't necessarily the best process in the world. So, I mean, as of right now, we have him as the third highest overall points plague at wide receiver going into this week. I suspect he may creep into the second one because I think we're going to end up lowering Beckham a little bit. Beckham's another guy. The Giants look like kind of a mess last night. This is where you get stuck evaluating, are the Giants a mess or is Minnesota just this good? Minnesota had really no problem with them at all last night. A couple interesting things for them. Diggs doesn't see as many targets, but is Jerick McKinnon starting to come up into the discussion of like just RB1 kind of value maybe?
Well, yeah, McKinnon's a guy we spent some time on going into last week. We may have even had a no halftime challenge on him. I can't remember, but I do think that McKinnon is a guy. I mean, we saw the best and the worst of McKinnon this week, so first of all, he obviously was getting the lion's share of the touches, but in a game where Minnesota was solidly in control, you know, 21 touches is a lot. I don't want to downplay that, especially given his price that he had to pay going into the week, which was $5,300 on FanDuel. But it's not like out of this world when the team is just so deeply in control. And we did see Asiata get in there for the goal line touches. So, you know, McKinnon did get to punch one in a little bit further out from the goal line and, you know, wound up paying his price and then some. I don't know that we're going to be thrilled with him going forward, you know, like especially if his price continues to tick up even just a little bit further. He's already $6,200 on FanDuel, which is entering that kind of no man's land of okay, but not even really very good running backs on FanDuel. So I'm not totally sure, honestly, where he's going to shake out for week six yet. I haven't totally, you know, pinned all that down for myself yet, but I do think he's going to be, he's very similar to like Orleans Darkwa, frankly, or guys like that, you know, guys who are going to get high teens carries, but maybe not the goal line. And that's not a great place to be for DFS.
Yeah, Darkwa actually wasn't too bad, all things considered. I thought he'd be a lot worse. But yeah, McKinnon, he faces Houston this week. They are going to be favorites. I believe even they opened at favorites. Yeah, opened at -5.5, which is right around where the Vikings were against the Giants this week. They're playing at home again. So I think McKinnon's still in a good spot going into week five, though the price might climb to the point where if it's just that little bit of committee with Asiata, then I don't know. It makes it really difficult. There's still guys that aren't in those committees that we can talk about, but a couple.
Well, that's really the thing, right? You don't need to play seven running backs. You only need to play two, and they're very competitive slots with some of the other value flying around. So, not that I won't rule out that McKinnon will wind up in lineups for us by the end of the week. You know, once we tweak targets and carries and all that stuff. But yeah, for week five, it's not clear that he's a slam dunk just yet.
Another guy that was sort of a chalkier play, we had him in the system. He ended up being pretty good. Doesn't get into the end zone, but Jordan Howard, it ended up going sort of the way we thought it would. With he got 23 carries. I think he had four targets in the passing game. He was clearly just the guy that Chicago was willing to just have this sort of as their every down back. They spelled him with Joik Bell a little bit, but not enough that I'm really worried about. That's what most teams will do that at some point during the game.
Yep.
So Howard going in, Langford is still out. Howard going into this week, do you see him as like into that upper class of running back? They play Indianapolis this week.
No, I don't. Howard, he was a guy that we were thrilled to play at 5,600, but at 7,200 going into this next week, I don't see him as in that tier of running back, frankly. So, yeah, it's a good matchup. And, you know, again, not a guy I'll rule out of being anywhere for us, but I don't see the reason to pay that much for a guy when, you know, you can get someone who in a similar situation, so say like Melvin Gordon, who's at 7,700, just 500 more with a good matchup at Oakland. But it's just a very competitive price slot and running back slot. So not a cash game guy for me, probably, but wouldn't be surprised if he shows up in some of my big tournament lineups.
Le'Veon Bell made his first appearance against the Chiefs. Well, first appearance this year, it happened to be against the Chiefs. And he was another guy we were wondering if this was, I think it was like 8,200 on FanDuel or something like that. Was this going to be the cheapest we saw him for the rest of the season? Like, was this our one chance to get value on Bell? It sure seems like it. He goes 18 carries, 144 yards on the ground. He also saw, six targets in the passing game, turns out into 534. So he just goes out, bangs off 178 total yards. The only thing that keeps him from being that upper echelon play was he doesn't get into the end zone. Do you see, are we going to be in a situation with Bell going forward where we're going to start considering him like in that 9,000 range where he's just back to being just totally elite back that can just do everything and the Steelers are happy to kind of play him? Or do you think that like they were just kind of getting him going and they'll still kind of just take more of a team approach?
Well, it's really hard to know. I mean, if this were any other week, we would go ahead and say that this is one of those learn nothing games, right? I mean, the Steelers were up by 36 going into the fourth quarter, so really hard to draw a lot of big conclusions. But frankly, the fact that Bell still saw 21 touches, is phenomenal, right. given how much they won by. So I'm prepared to say fully yes that he's in that elite category going forward. I don't think. I mean, given that again, Williams saw the ball so little in this game, in spite of the fact that they were up so much, just leads me to believe that they're happy to play Bell and put him out there and use him in all facets of the game. And yes, he'll be. I mean, we were playing D'Angelo Williams at 8,800, so I'd say yes. Fully on Le'Veon.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what his price is, because again, they're off this week, so we don't know. They're on a bye.
Yeah, he didn't score a touchdown, so that, I don't know how the site's algorithms work exactly, but his overall fantasy point total was basically the same as Melvin Gordon's, right? But the underlying numbers were so much stronger than Gordon's, yards per carry, just general usage, that he'll be a very interesting one to watch for week 6 when he comes back.
Yeah, Melvin Gordon really struggled to get anything going against the Saints defense. He was averaging less than 2 yards a carry this week. That's a sort of a troubling sign. 19 carries for 36 yards against the Saints defense.
And 16 for 35 against the Colts the week before that.
Right. And those are just numbers that aren't. I mean, this was the concern with Gordon going in. The concern with Gordon going in was he just wasn't that good. This is why they wanted to kind of pair him together with Woodhead. Right. And the not being good part is rearing its ugly head to some degree. I mean, I know he scored 2 touchdowns. It's really the only thing that even saved him, because the yards were such a disaster. Like 36 yards on 19 carries. I just can't overstate or understate how bad that is. Now, he makes up a decent amount of it. He makes a lot, almost all of it, with touchdowns. But he also still saw 7 targets in the passing game, caught it for 6 for 43. So he ends up with, altogether, he ends up with 25 touches, which is right around totally where we had him. What do you think about Gordon? Is it a red flag that he just really can't get anything going on the ground? 2 weeks in a row, and against two very, what we consider to be, bad defenses.
Well, this is one of those plays that always feels like a tightrope act, right, where he's clearly the guy, such as it is, in San Diego right now. Like, he's the only person they're really considering out of the backfield. And he's obviously getting all the goal line carries too, which really, we saw it in this game and the last week before that, is it really raises his floor, right? Like, if he's going to go out there, I mean, he scored 6 touchdowns in the first 4 games of the season, and he hasn't even been good yet. So there is a game where he could come out here and just explode and have some 40-point performance, right? If all these factors are going to be in place, except for the part where he just can't do anything with the carries he does get. Now, again, the competition for his spot here, like Dexter McCluster, none of these guys are going to swoop in and become the feature back, but I don't think it's unreasonable to suspect a running back by committee at some point in Gordon's future. The big question will be, will they tell us before they try that or not? Like, I would take his bad touches and all his goal line carries going forward. Like, if I knew he was going to be a true talent 3 yards per carry guy, but he was still going to get 7 targets in the passing game and all the goal line carries, like, he would still be worth his price to me. But that's just not clear, making him feel a lot riskier than normal.
Another guy that we were kind of down on going into this week that had a good – down on interest – I should say this. Whenever I say we're down on somebody, it's all relative to price, right? So, like, down on someone because of his salary was Jordan Reed. Reed was a guy we were worried about because the Redskins had been fine spreading it around to a bunch of different weapons between Jackson and Reed and Garcon and a couple other guys. So he comes out this week, catches 9 on 10 targets for 2 touchdowns. Where do we see Reed's targets trending? Like, do we kind of just keep him back to what he'd been doing up until this point in the season? Are we willing to bump those targets up just a little bit more into that sort of elite tight end level? Because we have been really concerned about if he's only going to see 7 to 8 targets a game. You simply can't pay these premium prices for him as opposed to a wide receiver one for another team. What are your thoughts on Reed?
Well, I think we saw this is a big thing we learned from this week about the Redskins, which is we hadn't really seen what their plan is when they're really in command of a game. And in this one, their plan was to not take a lot of risks. And it was interesting, too, because it almost cost them the game. Like, Cleveland came storming back in the second quarter when they tried to move back into this more conservative game plan, as opposed to the, Cousins every play, just throwing to somebody, doing whatever. But they did wind up coming out there and closing out the game, and they never really got any of their big play guys involved at all. Like, DeSean Jackson he saw 2 targets. Even Vernon Davis, who is kind of seen as the big play alternative to Jordan Reed, didn't really see much play. So, even other possession guys like Garcon and Crowder were clearly taking a backseat to Reed here as well. I don't know that we know for sure that he'll be like a double-digit target guy going forward, but this was reassuring enough to me to put him at least back up in the highest single digits, where things were headed in the wrong direction. I think things are pretty clearly headed in the right direction now. So, I'm more bullish on Reed going forward. I still don't know. He's not going to be an $8,000 player to me on FanDuel, and that might be an unpopular opinion, but, I mean, with 2 touchdowns in the first quarter, all of his fantasy production came in the first 9 minutes of the game here. And yeah, he still got it, so you can't dismiss it or anything, but still doesn't strike me as a guy in that price range for me.
And the last thing that I'll bring up, and I know you had some stuff that you wanted to talk about, but is that this is more of a week five thing than a week four thing. Tom Brady is back this week, and
yeah.
You know, they're coming off a loss. They looked really bad. But, I mean, Brissett looked bad, but that's to be expected. I mean, he was a third-string quarterback coming in. There was no – they never thought he was really going to play at all. And if anything, we had said that they got pretty lucky, all things considered, when they played the Texans, just in terms of where he was able to pick up the ball off some fumbles, maybe made him look a little better than he really was. Bills really shut him down. They couldn't get anything going. I don't really blame Brissett. It's not his fault. Like, the guy just wasn't prepared, and you just can't – you're just not going to be able to just run out and just be great no matter who you are. With Brady back this week, though – what's your gut feeling about just like how they use him in his first week? How do we readjust? Because we had readjusted some of the Patriots just offensive weapons. Do we just kind of put them all back at not preseason levels, but like maybe 2015 levels in terms of like Edelman and Gronk and their targets? Like, what's the gut call before we really do a deep dive on it on Brady going into week five?
Oh, you're trying to set me up for a little hashtag narrative street. That's what it feels like. It feels like you're setting me up here. But normally the narrative thing and like the Patriots, they're going to be in full on FU mode. They're going to come in here and really start cracking some skulls. Like makes me lick my chops and want to bet the other side whenever people start going down that path. But in this case, it kind of feels appropriate.
That's what I mean. I'm usually with you on that line of thinking because I think it's dumb. Like, I just like don't even care about like any real narratives at all, except this one actually feels real. Like
it does feel real. It's crazy to say, but it does sure seem. I mean, I'll say yes for sure on Tom Brady. I think Tom Brady is going to be, you know, have his hair on fire and really looking to crack some skulls, no question about it. I think I can say that about Edelman to a certain degree as well. The guy I'm a little more concerned about is Gronkowski. So like the Patriots had a 100-yard receiver at tight end last week when they got shut out by Buffalo, but it was Martellus Bennett. And is that like, I have to think that no matter who plays quarterback, if Gronk really is this transcendent talent, and I believe him to be, and I think you do too, that he would still be open, right? Like,
well,
throwing the ball.
Like last week,
he's freaking out, and you can't cover him. And so I guess this is all this to say, I'm just concerned about the hamstring with Gronkowski.
It's so hard to know because, like, it's hard to know if this is where the Patriots are just an impossible team to sometimes evaluate. It's hard to know if they're just saving him, which they've done in the past, right? Like, it's hard to know if it is an injury thing. If they're just willing to like not put him in harm's way, really, until Brady comes back, because I think they were, I honestly think that they were kind of just, I think they tried to win these games, but I think they were also just okay with losing, like just being from a realistic standpoint, like to the point where like Belichick's a pretty smart guy. Like he's not going to risk getting like his best asset hurt in like a suboptimal situation. I don't know. So I just can't figure it out really. I don't know. We're probably not going to know just because they're just not going to be, you know, super honest with all their news and injury reports. But
well, sure. But so the case against Gronk, let me continue to make it here. So he only played 14 snaps in week three, right? And he came out and played 41 snaps against the Bills. So that's a trend in the positive direction. But he only ran a passing route on 13 of those 41 snaps. So what, you know, like that's just not good, right? I mean, Bennett was out there considerably more. I'm concerned. I don't know why he wouldn't at least be out there running pass routes in a game they're getting shut out, in a game that's within reach. Like, what are you saving him for? Like, aren't they theoretically going to be much better with Brady back anyway? Like, isn't Gronk more important when Brady's not there? I'm just not sure. I could see him having an absolutely huge week and them cracking helmets and, you know, just being super pumped to see each other and all that stuff.
Right.
But I don't know. I'm not going to pay a premium on him, I guess is what I'll say. He's 7,200 on FanDuel. That feels about right. I could definitely see playing him, frankly, in all formats at that price. That's not unreasonable at all. But you're taking a big risk by playing a guy who's only played 55 snaps total this season.
Yeah, we have him back to being, like, for going into this week, the highest raw point tight end. Although I'm realizing I had the Carolina game unclicked because, yeah, we still have more than Olsen. So he's the highest raw point tight end, but not to the point where, like, he's a must play, which, yeah, I'm with you. I think that just sounds like a reasonable number. What did you – so those are some of the things that stood out to me. I probably took some of the low-hanging fruit in terms of like the bigger news pieces coming out of week four into week five. What are some things that stood out to you coming out of week four?
you know, way to take all the news and then ask me if I know anything to make me seem like
buddy,
an honest.
If you don't know anything,
I really appreciate that.
If you don't know anything, it's cool. You can just say, I don't know. You know, you can say,
I know tons of stuff.
Or you could lie and say, like, that was all the
trends,
things.
And yeah. I'm going to blow your mind right now. So why don't you sit that back for a second, okay? Just hand over the microphone and I'll take it from here. This is going to be like that part in 8 Mile where Eminem gets up on stage and says a lot of raps that are really mean about the other guys. So.
not the first two times when he just blows it.
It's not going to be like those times where he blows it at all. It's going to be mostly like the time where he's really, really good at rapping.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Wasn't sure which part of the movie you were discussing there. Okay, got it. I'm with you now.
You remember that part? It was pretty sweet. So I think there was a really big standout trend for me coming out of week four. I keep mixing this up, by the way. Last week was week four, coming up on week five, yeah. And that was the distribution of runs and passes. So, I mean, we talked a lot about going into this season how we're in this new age of the NFL where 100-yard receivers, you know, we had 3.5 times as many 100-yard receivers as 100-yard passers last season. And, you know, I still stand by those emerging trends and believe them to be a real thing. But I think it's very interesting. I mean, so last week we had only 5 passers with more than 300 yards, and 4 of those had almost exactly 300. Like Phil Rivers had 321, then Westbrook, Hoyer, and Roethlisberger all had between 309 and 300. So that's just no passing. I mean, in a season where we all thought it was just going to be, you know, in a continuation of last year's trend, that just wasn't the case whatsoever. We also had, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We had 7 running backs with 20 carries or more. We only had 8 wide receivers with 100 passing yards or receiving yards or more. And these were not names that anyone expected, I don't think, going into this week. So you had Julio Jones and AJ Green, so great. After that, it was John Brown, Dontrell Inman, Jimmy Graham, Eddie Royal, Steve Smith, and Martellus Bennett. So basically, this is a long way of saying that it seems like receiving yards and passing yards aren't quite as safe and projectable as we anticipated them being going into the season. And I think that's going to be a really interesting mind shift for me going forward throughout the season, because I believe, I mean, we talked about this a ton, but I think even industry-wide going into the season, it was kind of the perception was that the big name receivers was where you could get your safety.
Yep.
And you know, you would just go elsewhere for upside, or you know, you'd try to go cheap at running back or whatever, and I'm just not sure that's going to be the case going forward. So I'm not ready to say that it's a whole paradigm shift. I mean, this is only 1 week worth of data, but it's at least got my antenna up, and I don't know if you noticed the same thing or what.
Well, it's just funny because it does strike me as there are a bunch of, there's more running backs than I thought would be quote unquote safe now than I did at the beginning of the season, right? So like, we mentioned Gordon. I'd still probably put him in that category because he has no one really kind of competing with him. You know, I put 4 just other guys that are showing near the top of our list in terms of I'm not worried about them getting the projected touches at this point. So it's like Gordon, Forte. I kind of would still put Lamar Miller in there, but he's playing Minnesota this week, so I'm not going to end up playing him at all. But like Gurley is in that discussion. Ezekiel Elliott is definitely in that discussion. Jordan Howard is probably now there with no Langford.
That's just Le'Veon Bell.
Le'Veon Bell now, right? Yeah, right. He's off this week, but that list is a lot longer than when you look at just like the group of top wide receivers that are maybe in and around the same price point. So I would not put Beckham in that group anymore. Right. I would put Antonio Brown. I'm a little jury is out on Julio Jones, though.
It's, sure, DeAndre Hopkins.
No, 100% no. Like, and then you have like guys like Jordy Nelson, T.Y. Hilton, and then it really actually falls off a cliff.
We have that whole category of guys who essentially catches half their targets, right? Allen Robinson, T.Y. Hilton, Mike Evans. Like, you know, good luck counting on them in the 8,000s in a cash game. I mean, it's just you're never going to feel great. Alshon Jeffrey hasn't had a resurgence. You know, then you've got kind of the up and coming guys like Marvin Jones, but you know, he takes a step back this week as well. I don't know. I don't know how you can feel. There's a few wide receivers you can feel great about, and I don't want to overstate things, right? I mean, the week before this one was a huge passing week where we had a lot of big performances, but the running back situation, I think, is the big takeaway for me, and that there's a lot more safety at running back than we pictured, and that might mean you just do slightly different things for your cash games, you know?
Well, it's funny, too, because some of these other, I probably should have mentioned AJ Green. I would put in that group of, I'm not worried about his targets. Like, they
no,
seem
no,
pretty
he's,
safe.
He's climbed back into that
yes.
top group.
But then you get like a game, like, so you see like a Michael Crabtree game. Crabtree catches 3 touchdowns. Yeah. Well, when you see a game like that, it comes at the expense of someone else that was like a wide receiver yeah. one typically, and that's Amari Cooper. So, like, he, all of a sudden, right, you just can't be Kelvin Benjamin too. Like, these are a lot of just huge question mark guys. Like, and that's just a lot of guys. And I mean, I probably just mentioned almost half the teams that that have some kind of question mark regarding a wide receiver one. I mean, obviously, some of these guys came into the season higher than others.
Well, we liked Fitzgerald going into last week. He also kind of was a no-show.
Right. And so that's just, yeah. So maybe they're just, which in the end, what it really does is make you, so the guys who haven't changed at all, like specifically Antonio Brown. like so when Antonio Brown is still getting just crazy targets, even with Bell back, he's just a guy. I'm almost willing to pay him, just try to save anywhere else. Like try to maybe just get some of that value receivers lower down the chain and not try to pay a premium and just pay a premium for the guy that you just know is going to get the touches. And so, I don't know. It makes a guy like him even safer to me. And I got to do a mea culpa here. I've been saying that the Steelers were on a bye this week, but it was because I was not seeing Bell in our system, which I've since corrected. And so they are playing this week. So if you were queuing up an angry comment about the pod that I just didn't know what I was talking about, just maybe just hit backspace a couple times. And
well, most of those people have stopped listening already, Doug, so thanks a lot, dude.
Yeah, they're like, oh my God, this donkey does a podcast. I didn't even know who they were playing. God. So anyway, my bad. The Steelers are playing the Jets this week. Not a fantastic defensive matchup, but it begs the question about guys like Brown. Like, even when they're in not so great matchups, are they safe? Are they still, is a guy like him still kind of on the safer side just because the team has been clear, there's been no change, he's one of the few guys where they just said, you know, what was happening in 2015 is now happening again this year?
Sure seems like it, right? I mean, he just goes out there and keeps getting a huge, huge, huge percentage of his team's targets. There's precedent for it in the past, great relationship with his quarterback. He was doing amazing things even when Bell was there last year too. So yeah, no, I think Brown is still clearly the number one, and then there's a big group beneath him.
Well, it's funny too about Brown, because in some ways having Bell back helps him, I suspect, because it's just another guy that teams need to key in on. And actually, the Steelers showed that they said it before the game, and they actually did it.
Lining up Bell up in the slot.
Exactly. And yeah, if they're going to be able to do that, that's just another guy that you cannot now double cover a guy like Brown. So it probably just in some ways helps him from that standpoint. All right, we are going to jump off the air and start updating projections for this coming week. There's a lot to really kind of stew on. We'll be back again on Thursday with our main picks and who the main cash game targets we'll have. We'll have our projections already updated for week 5 in the first run, but we're going to spend most of today really diving deep and figuring out, you know, where every guy stands and what kind of basic assumptions we can make about each play. We are from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com or dfsr.com, and if you want those aforementioned projections, head on over to the site, and for just $29.95, you can get access to the projections plus optimal lineups calculated through Lineup Lab, and that includes MLB still for the playoffs, NBA just a few short weeks away, and then you'll get base projections for NHL, not optimal lineups, but we will have our base NHL projections up within the next few days. Buddy, I'll talk to you again on Thursday.
Yeah, man. See you soon.